more.
Glorious day, fellow traveler. Welcome to Science and God with Dr. G. That's me, Dr. Michael Gillen, physicist, astronomer, mathematician, and Christian. That's right, living, breathing evidence that science and Christianity are not mortal enemies, but good friends. Actually, an awesome power couple. Today I want to talk to you about disagreements. That's right, disagreements and their evil twin, cancel culture. You know what I'm talking about. Do or say something that stirs up a commotion nowadays and you risk being vilified, blacklisted, fired from your job, or worse, driven to suicide. That's happened. Instead of just disagreeing with you or critiquing what you say or do, cancellation warriors will pounce on you like wild animals and seek to utterly destroy you, to cancel you. That's what I mean by cancel culture. But Dr. G, you ask, why in the world is this a topic for science plus God? I know what you're asking. Well, because as you're going to see, both science and Christianity have important lessons to teach us about disagreements and today's cancel culture. These are lessons that we all need to hear right now because cancellation warriors are ripping apart our society and we can't let that happen, right? Right. So let's get started. All right. First of all, let's be honest, all right? We all have disagreements, all of us. Even if you're a super nice person who avoids conflict, and I know lots of people like that, you know, sooner or later, you're going to have arguments with people, you know, and I don't care if they happen at home, at work, in public, with family, with friends, with total strangers. Disagreements are a fact of life, a sad fact of life on planet Earth. You know, even Jesus himself had his share of blowups, right? So, in fact, that's why the Bible has some very specific advice about how we should deal with disagreements. First, try working things out with the person directly, you know, one-on-one, mano a mano. If that doesn't pan out, well, try working things out in the presence of several witnesses. That's what the Bible counsels us to do. Third, if that doesn't pan out, well, try working things out in front of your entire church and in front of the entire congregation. And fourth, if that, even that doesn't pan out, well, you have God's permission to part company with that person you disagree with. But nothing worse than that, okay? That's the point. Unfortunately, today, cancellation warriors skip right past those four biblical steps and go straight to the nuclear option, total and complete annihilation, total and complete cancellation. You know, today we hear of family members canceling each other over political disagreements, even during the biggest holidays of the year, Thanksgiving and Christmas. It's really, really tragic. We hear friends canceling each other over current events. You know, a recent YouGov poll found that 1 in 5 Americans have permanently lost close friends over what? Disagreements about the coronavirus, for goodness sakes. Can you imagine canceling a lifelong friend because you disagree about how to handle the pandemic? Okay, just to be clear, my friend, we're not talking about beliefs or behaviors that are universally condemned as evil, you know, like pedophilia or genocide or rape. Nor are we talking about people who've been legally convicted of a heinous crime and deserve to be punished. We're talking about ordinary people having ordinary disagreements about ordinary everyday things. Disagreements that instantly escalate into cancellations. How have we gotten to this terrible place? Why has cancel culture become so popular in our society? Well, it's a complicated phenomenon, isn't it? But there are at least three main culprits, all right? And I believe the rise of these three main culprits represents the perfect storm for what we're witnessing today, all right? Number one, a big culprit, technology. Now, if you're old enough like me, you can remember when long-distance calls were super expensive. They were also super rare. You wouldn't do them because they were so expensive. But not anymore. You know, because of the internet, the web, you can now trumpet your voice all over the world instantly and for mere pennies. Think about it. All you need is a smartphone and a service provider. And you can reach more people through social media than Jesus, than Jesus did during his entire time on earth. That, my friend, that's awesome, heady power. And too many people are abusing it. Now, please understand, I'm not blaming technology completely. No, that would be silly. What I'm saying is that technology makes today's cancel culture possible. Why? Well, precisely because it amplifies as never before, not only our voices, but our worst impulses. Think about it this way. It's like people in your life who bring out the worst in you. You know people like that. I know people like that. You know, they bring out the worst in you. No matter how well you try to behave around them, somehow they just get at you and they bring out the worst in you. Now, are they to blame for your bad behavior? No, not completely. But, this is a big but without them kind of provoking you, without them, the worst in you would not come out as much. I mean, that's just a fact. That, my fellow traveler, that is the situation we have with today's technology. It's the best friend you have in life who brings out the worst in you. Not the best, but the worst in you. All right. Number two, the second culprit I see making cancel culture possible today is what I call the art of demonizing. You know, historically, when you look at history, bad actors who wanted to destroy innocent people have started out by demonizing them. Yeah, that's crucial. You know, the Nazis, and I know this is a well-worn example, but it bears repeating and thinking about. The Nazis used this demonizing tactic to perfection. If you look at the literature back then that they were disseminating or their radio, listen to their radio broadcasts, they demonized Jews and other so-called undesirables by blaming them for Germany's problems, like their great inflation they had, and comparing these people literally to vermin. I mean, I've seen horrible political cartoons that compare Jews and these other desirables to like ants or termites or something. Less than human. And of course, after you do that, it's easy to exterminate them. And that's exactly what the Nazis did. Now, today, fast forward to today, we're seeing the same thing happen. In communist China, the communist Chinese government is using this very same demonizing tactic to exterminate the Uyghurs. And the communist Cuban government is using this very same demonizing tactic to exterminate innocent protesters. They're calling these people who are protesting against communism, you know, enemies of the state or domestic terrorists. And unfortunately, very close to home, this very same tactic is being used here in our beloved United States. Never thought I'd see that day happen, but it has, and it is happening. Not necessarily to exterminate innocent Americans, of course. We're not talking about that level of cancellation. Hopefully we never will. But, you know, that tactic is being used to demonize and cancel innocent people. All right. Number three, There's another thing technology has made possible, and I call it the age of customization. It started about 18 years ago, I'll never forget, with the launch of the first social media platform. Remember what it was called? All right, it was called MySpace. Remember, it was such a big deal, even Rupert Murdoch bought it up. It was like the hot new thing. It was the first social media platform before Twitter, before Facebook, before Instagram or any of that. And, you know, MySpace, and this is what made it so novel and so exciting for everybody. MySpace offered you, yes, you and me, it offered you your own piece of virtual real estate for free. You know, you could customize your page, your web page, by choosing your favorite color scheme, your favorite buttons, and your favorite layout. You know, it was like owning your very own personal online storefront. Okay, except that instead of selling merchandise, you now had the chance to sell yourself to a global audience. This has never happened before. This never had happened before. Absolutely unprecedented. In the history of our species, nothing like that had ever existed before. And to my mind, it was the beginning of the age of customization. It was the opening salvo of the me, myself, and I revolution. Today, technology makes it possible for you to customize just about everything, right? You know, from the design of your coffee mug, t-shirt, and sneakers, to the home screen on your smartphone, to your online music library, to your baby's DNA, and by the way, your own DNA as well, to your personal identity, and even your very own reality. That's what it's come down to. You know, by picking and choosing who you listen to and watch online, yeah, you can customize the bubble of reality you live in. You even have the power to evict anyone who disagrees with your custom-tailored reality. You know, you can unfriend them, you can block them, or worse, you can cancel them. You know, I think back in when I was in middle school, my social studies teacher always wrote a thought of the day on the chalkboard. And I remember always kind of looking forward to seeing what it was every day when I walked into her classroom. It was like a little surprise, a little gift from the teacher. I wonder if teachers do that anymore. I hope they do. Anyway, after all these years, the one thought of the day I clearly remember is this one. And I can quote it word for word. Here it is, quote, "The best way to cool down a red-hot disagreement is with a single ice cold fact," unquote. Don't you just love that? Anyway, for some reason, it just hit me, maybe because I was a little budding nerd scientist or something, and I was already in love with facts. But today, the age of customized reality emasculates, there's no other word for it, emasculates the very idea of a fact or of any other absolute for that matter, you know? Think about it. Absolutes cannot be molded to your liking. Absolutes are like one size fits all off-the-shelf generic brand clothing. Absolutes are like tract homes. There's no place for such commonalities in a truly custom-made reality. You know, a custom-made reality, like a custom-made house or a custom-made car or a custom-made dress, must be built around your personal tastes, not around absolutes, not around facts, but around your personal idiosyncratic tastes. You know, a custom-made reality must be built around you, around your unique personal experiences, opinions, and above all, feelings. Oh, there's that word, feelings. It's what you hear these days, right? You know, in my new book, Believing is Seeing, I cite a British study. Now listen to this. It's a British study where young people were told to read some news stories. Okay, simple enough. Afterward, they were asked to identify which statements were factual and which statements were editorial. Well, guess how many of these young people could not tell the difference? I'll give you a second. Think about it. 91%. That's right. Astonishing. A whopping 9 out of 10 of these young people could not tell the difference between facts and opinions. Let that sink in for a moment. In this age of customized realities, opinions are the new facts. And good old-fashioned true facts, well, in many people's minds, they've become irrelevant, if not altogether extinct. Let me give you a specific example of what I'm talking about. It'll illustrate very clearly what I'm talking about. Listen to this exchange between a young woman and a man on the streets of Los Angeles. It was captured on videotape and posted on YouTube. Here we go. Woman. As a human being, we should pay attention to fear, not logic. Man. Wait. You said pay attention to fear and not logic? Woman. Yes. Man. I should pay attention to emotions and not facts? Woman. Yes. Emotions are the only thing that are real in this world. Well, there in a nutshell, my friend, is what I'm explaining to you. In today's age of customized reality, objectivity goes out the window. Bye-bye. Factual, level-headed, cool-headed disagreements are no longer possible. When feelings and opinions rule your life, all disagreements become intensely personal and emotional for you. To the point where canceling someone who disagrees with you is really the only option you have to protect the illusion of your personalized universe, your custom-tailored reality. So then, what do science and Christianity have to say about all this? Well, this is where it gets interesting. How do they advise you and me to react to today's cancel culture? Well, for starters, both science and Christianity teach us to react wisely. You and I need to be fully aware going in that today's cancel culture, what we're seeing today, is nothing new. It's nothing new. Consider the tragic story of Ignaz Semmelweis. Okay, he was an early 19th century Hungarian physician. Back then, countless women giving birth routinely died of puerperal or childbed fever, and no one knew why. It was a great mystery. Quite often, medical students went straight from the dissecting room where they inspected and dissected diseased corpses barehanded, no rubber gloves in those days, and they went straight from there, guess where, to the maternity ward where they attended women giving birth. Well, for Semmelweis, this was an aha moment. He noticed that and he was, what? Oh, I have an idea. So based on a hunch, he began requiring his medical students to wash their hands with a chlorinated lime solution after being in the dissecting room. Okay, and sure enough, in 1847, the rate of childbed fever plummeted. It was very dramatic. Now, today we know that childbed fever is mostly caused by a bacterium called Streptococcus pyogenes. But scientists back then were mostly ignorant about microscopic pathogens. So Semmelweis was summarily canceled. Yeah, believe it or not, canceled. He was ridiculed, rejected, and fired from his position at the famous Vienna General Hospital. Now, to be honest, Semmelweis had always been an excitable, irascible, unpopular person. So his colleagues were only too happy to take him down for any reason, good or bad. Okay. But their brutal behavior only made things worse. You know, completely rattled by their cancellation, Semmelweis became more cantankerous than ever before. And here's the point. The escalating calamity reached an appalling climax when medical colleagues duped Semmelweis into visiting a brand new mental hospital, where he was promptly ambushed, straitjacketed, and savagely beaten. 2 weeks later, in 1865, he died of an infected wound, an infection, mind you, that easily could have been prevented if only the attending physicians had taken seriously Semmelweis's landmark discovery, landmark protocol. Very sad. Second, science and Christianity both teach us to react bravely. We must not cave to those who would cancel us, period. And nowhere is this bravery more evident than in the history of Christianity. You know, the epic saga began when Herod the Great ordered the slaying of the baby Jesus, and it resulted in the massacre of the innocents described in the book of Matthew, clearly the most extreme form of cancellation. And it didn't stop there, did it? You know, the deadly offensive continued when Jewish leaders, primarily in Jerusalem, successfully connived to crucify the adult Jesus. And after Jesus himself was beyond their reach, anti-Christian zealots such as Saul of Tarsus and Nero turned their wrath on his followers, people just like you and me if you're a Christian. They did everything in their power to cancel Christianity. And it's a dogged persecution that continues to this very day. Can you imagine 2,000 years later and we're still, you know, we're still seeing that. And yet, because enough Christians back then stood firmly by their beliefs, the religion survived. No, in fact, it flourished. Because today, despite all the persecution, because of the extraordinary bravery of those early Christians, Christianity is both the largest and most widely dispersed religion on the planet. Finally, science and Christianity teach us to react truthfully and lovingly, which I know, it sounds paradoxical given that today's cancellation warriors behave so untruthfully and unlovingly. Right? But that's precisely the point, isn't it? It's always tempting. Come on, be honest. It's always tempting to cancel those who seek to cancel us. Yet, Jesus himself condemns the very idea of fighting evil with evil. That's what he means by telling us to turn the other cheek. He's saying to us that the best way to defeat today's cancel culture is with nonviolence and truth. And guess what? Science agrees. According to the scientific method, now listen to this. According to the scientific method, scientists should feel free to express their ideas, however controversial, without fear of being canceled. Bottom line. Truth, my friend. Hard data, hard facts, not some bullying consensus like the one we saw in the time of Semmelweis. Truth, hard facts, not some bullying consensus is the only way to settle disagreements. That's according to the scientific method, all right? Look, I'll be the first to admit, this is a hard lesson to swallow, okay? Especially today. Sometimes you just want to fight fire with fire. I was going to say fight evil with evil, but let's just say you want to fight fire with fire. I get it. But most of the time, honestly, I do now try to follow the ideal standards of science and Christianity. I didn't always. I was younger, stupider. It was more prone to getting suckered into these arguments. Not anymore. Most of the time, I remind myself that disagreements per se are actually not a bad thing. No, they're not. In fact, disagreements are the bread and butter of science. You know, without disagreements, without a free and sometimes, yeah, fierce and raucous exchange of ideas, science would come to a stop, a dead stop. It would stagnate without disagreements. But as we saw in the story of Ignaz Semmelweis, when disagreements morph into ugly cancellations, they become destructive and drive our science, our entire species, our entire society backwards, not forwards. Second, most of the time I do try moderating my disagreements with humility and forgiveness. It's not always easy, I confess, but after all, none of us is perfect, and me included. Put me first in line, okay? In John 8:7, Jesus confronts an angry, self-righteous mob who's about to stone an adulteress to death. And he says to the mob, quote, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her," unquote. Whoa, I would have loved to have been there to hear him and see him say that. Today's cancellation warriors are exactly like that angry, self-righteous mob. They're ready to stone people who aren't perfect, weren't perfect, and never will be perfect. You know, just like the cancellation warriors themselves are not perfect, but they'll never admit it. Cancellation warriors don't care if someone was or is brilliant, heroic, or self-sacrificing. If that someone did even one thing wrong in their lifetime or had even one character flaw, God forbid, boom! The angry, self-righteous cancellation mob will take that someone down. Third, most of the time I do avoid getting sucked into silly disagreements. Like I said, when I was younger, maybe I was more prone to that. Not anymore. I don't take the bait. You know, 2 Timothy 2:23 puts it this way, quote, "Don't have anything to do with foolish and stupid arguments because, you know, they produce quarrels," unquote. In other words, you're just adding fuel to the fire. You're not adding anything constructive, right? It's actually the main reason I don't participate in stage debates, and I'm always invited to do that, you know, to be a part of a debate. Over the years, I have found that no matter how well moderated staged debates are, they tend to degenerate into precisely the silly arguments the Bible warns against. I have other reasons too. Number one, you know, staged debates are not a productive way to communicate. They're just not. Usually you end up spending most of the time responding to your opponent's assertions, which might or might not be relevant or enlightening. Most of the time they're not. Number two, staged debates are, let's face it, 9 parts theater and 1 part deep discussion, if even that much, which is why they typically attract larger, rowdier audiences. Number three, stage debates tend to stereotype the participants in a very simple-minded way. You know, the Christian versus the atheist, you know, the Christian versus the lion, or whatever, you know. You know, and I'm not that easily defined. I'm not that easily pigeonholed, okay? So thank you, no thank you. And number four, and this is important, okay? I don't really see a discussion about God and science as being adversarial. I just don't. Unlike professional provocateurs, in other words, I'm not in the business of mocking other people's religions or trying to change their minds or try to bully them into thinking another way. I don't have that power and I don't have that ambition. Instead, here's how I see myself. I see myself as being in the business of sharing what I've discovered during my own journey in life. That's it. My hope is that it will somehow help you on your journey. That's why I call you my fellow traveler. Okay? No matter what you believe, you're my fellow traveler. You know, so instead of these stage debates, these silly stage debates, I prefer having thoughtful, productive one-on-one discussions with well-informed people. That's really important, well-informed people. It's very hard to have, you know, a meaningful discussion with somebody who's just kind of brainwashed or, you know, hasn't done their research or whatever. One-on-one discussions with well-informed people, man, that is my preference. That's my high, if you will. Okay. You know, people who ask tough questions, the tougher the better, and people who are out to listen and learn just as I am, not just to talk, but to listen and learn just as I am. That's why I say at the end of every one of these journeys, this is not a lecture series. No, I want to hear from you. And I do hear from you. And I love hearing from you. I love hearing what you have to say. So please, give me some feedback. When you're on a journey and I say something that inspires you or angers you or whatever, I want to hear from you. I want to hear from you, my fellow traveler. Anyway, didn't mean to go off on such a tangent. Let me ask you this, finally, my friend. What are you doing about today's cancel culture? Okay. If you just shrug it off or if you just ignore it, I'm sorry to say you're aiding and abetting it. Yeah, that's not good. It's not good. For as it says in James 4:17, quote, whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it, for him, it is sin, unquote. So make no mistake, whatever else it is, today's cancel culture is emphatically, emphatically anti-scientific and anti-Christian. It goes completely against how the scientific method and Jesus teach us how to behave. Today's cancellation warriors live to destroy the light of civil discourse, and make no mistake about it. Today's cancellation warriors live to demonize you, to annihilate you, simply because you say or do something that offends them. Worst of all, today's cancellation warriors live to perpetuate the long, ugly history of hatefulness, ignorance, and intolerance. For all those reasons, my friend, for all those reasons and then some, I myself oppose and condemn today's cancel culture 100%, period. Instead, I choose to live by those absolute principles Jesus and the scientific method teach me. Instead of hatefulness, ignorance, and intolerance, I choose truth, love, and civilized disagreements. Okay, that's it for now. Remember, this podcast is not a lecture series. It's a conversation. So now it's your turn. Comments, questions? I'm eager to hear from you. There's all kinds of ways you can connect up with me via my social media links in the show notes below. Till next time, I'm still Dr. G saying, I love science, I love God, I also love you, my fellow traveler. Thanks for listening.